Welcome to High Energy Health, where together we explore the leading edge of wellness and happiness. I'm your host, Dawson Church. By choosing this time together, you're declaring your commitment to a positive mindset, elevated emotions, and a great life. Thanks for joining me for today's episode.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of the High Energy Health Podcast. I am Miriam Paninsky, Consciousness Programs Director at EFT Universe. I'm filling in for my amazing friend, teacher, mentor, boss, Dawson Church. And today I have the honor and the joy, the pleasure of talking to Scott Stabile, who just published his new book, Enough As You Are. Scott, I'm so excited to talk to you today. Hello. Welcome.
Hey, hi, Miriam. I'm so excited to be here with you. Thank you.
For those of you, Scott, who don't know you yet, I just want to say a few words about you just for it, so our audience can get to know you. So Scott Stabile is the author of Enough As You Are and Big Love, The Power of Living with a Wide Open Heart. He's a passionate love advocate, I love that, who believes there is no force more powerful than love to create real connection and healing in our world. And Scott guides transformational breathwork journeys and leads personal empowerment workshops internationally. His inspirational posts have attracted a huge audience and devoted social media following. So 350K Facebook fans and more. Welcome, Scott, again.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here again.
Yes, this is a real special read, and I'd really kind of like to dive in. So Enough As You Are. I'd very simply like to start with what has inspired you to put this book out there. Who did you want to touch? Who did you want to reach with this message, really, is what it is.
I would love to reach everyone with this message, because the message ultimately is the importance of self-love and self-acceptance. I would say that's the overarching theme with the book, and really just understanding that the relationship that we develop with ourselves informs how we show up for everyone and everything in our lives. And the more love and compassion we can show for ourselves, the more naturally we're able to show up with love and compassion for others. And what could be more important, honestly? You know, I think we hear all the time that everything starts from within. And that's essentially what I'm speaking to, that understanding that it is within our power to develop with ourselves a much more loving relationship, and that love always transcends self, so that by doing so, we're automatically fueling in a good way everything else that we engage in.
So basically saying, and that kind of like leads me to another question I was going to ask later, but it is befitting now, is kind of also saying that by embracing this, not just message, but really kind of like way of living, way of connecting, way of doing anything, that makes a change. And you have actually like also talked about this term of the love activist. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that before we dive a little bit deeper into some of the messaging in the book.
Sure. You know, Miriam, I was always a person that stuttered through whenever anyone asked me, what do? I would be like, well, I do some writing. It was always this messy answer to the question. And then a friend of mine referred to me as a love activist once. And I'm like, ah, that is a title I can absolutely embrace. And what that means for me really is just, I'm a person who makes a lot of noise for the power of love in our lives. And I really do see love as our greatest healer and the only energy. And when I'm speaking about love, I'm speaking about what I see as just energy. Love is an energy that's alive within us and outside of us and available to us all the time. And it encompasses forgiveness, kindness, compassion, empathy, all these things that feel really good to give and receive. And without love, I just don't see the possibility for healing to be created. I think that there are a lot of change agents in the world, but unless you have love supporting whatever else you've got going on, there's no chance for healing. So really, that's for me what a love activist is. It's just reminding myself, first and foremost, I'm not always in the love zone. You know, I fall off the train, as we all do, and nudge myself back as quickly as possible. But reminding myself and others that, hey, we have got to incorporate love into the ways in which we're showing up for ourselves and each other if we want to heal.
Heal and make a change.
Well, yeah. That's the healing is transformation, right? Yes. But healing is actually transformation that it's more than, I mentioned change agents. Like I think of anger, which is a very powerful emotion and necessary
productive,
emotion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Productive, but anger on its own is not going to create healing. It's going to create change, but it's going to end up looking
a lot
like
it only goes
like
so far.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I have had these discussions a lot with my amazing Black teachers and Black Buddhist teachers where that's a lot what is kind of like struggling with is kind of like between, you know, acknowledging the anger and the hurt, but also then acknowledging when can we use this really as the productive force to transform, which is a step further. It doesn't end anger or the expression of anger.
And for me with that, in anger in general, it's just about being real with what's going on, being angry as you need to be. And then when you're able to, asking like, well, what is love inviting me to do with this anger now? How can love serve this rage in a way that creates something that could resemble healing in this situation?
Yeah. And you say also so powerfully, remind us that it kind of starts with the relationship with ourselves and how this kind of like informs really so much of how we show up to anything. It's of course something that's kind of like, especially in the self-growth world, very quickly put out there as kind of like this message of self-love. But I'd love to hear some of your thoughts and kind of your languaging around that, what the significance of the relationship to ourselves is, what the significance of self-love is.
Well, if I just look at my own life and the way I've moved through my own life and how when I am not connecting to self-love, when I am lost in this idea that I'm unworthy or not enough, I'm buying all the lies of my mind, the self-abusive lies that tell me I'm in some way unworthy and not enough. How I move through the world, it's like energetically I'm shut down, right? I'm meek. I'm not offering the fullness of who I am. And because everything here is energy and it's energy responding to energy. And when I'm moving through the world like that, generally speaking, how I'm engaging and what I'm inviting into my life reflects that muted energy. And then conversely, when I'm actually living into my strength, my power, my worthiness, and it feels more open and expansive, and I move through the world with this expansive energy as a person who actually is connecting to self-love, the connections, the possibilities, the circumstances that I naturally create from that place are wholly different. And I really think that it's just about paying attention. Right? Paying attention to how we are showing up and what we're actually creating and magnetizing into our lives from that place, we're likely to see that the better our relationship is with ourselves, the better our life becomes in general. It's like a 1+1=2 equation when you really start to bring awareness to it.
Yeah. There's no other way, really.
There's no other way. And the daunting thing about that for some people listening may be, well, I don't really know how to love myself. But the exciting thing about that is understanding that it is always what we do from this moment on that matters the most in our lives. So if you're here and you're breathing and you have a willingness and a desire to get in better relationship with yourself, it's never too late to create that and to strengthen that.
Yeah, it's kind of like along the lines of when people also say, if I feel safe, I can't afford to love myself because there are so many other demands or things out there, or, you know, whether it's children or difficult relationships or kind of like whatever kind of unsafe attachments people are coming that make you believe that you can't, that it's not safe to love yourself. The truth is you cannot not afford to love yourself.
Exactly. It's not safe to not love yourself.
Yeah.
But to what you're saying also, I think a lot of what comes up for a lot of people, and especially women, because of the way women are conditioned in this country, this idea of selfishness and that it's selfish to focus on yourself in this way when you should be serving others and taking care of everyone else first. And to that, I would just want to really say that self-love is selfish, sure, because it's focused on yourself, but is the most beautiful selfishness we have to work with. Because as I said earlier, love always transcends self, which is to say, by taking care of yourself, and we know this, that's why it's like, put your oxygen mask on first and then put the kids' oxygen mask, or that famous quote, you can't pour from an empty cup. We know that when we're serving ourselves and taking care of ourselves, we're always able to show up for others in a better way. So, and love for me in my experience is always a pure positive energy. It is always of service. It is always helping. So there's no downside to love, whether you're directing it at yourself or others, as far as I see it.
Yeah, absolutely. And on the note of selfishness, Scott, you do often reference the living in your truth, which is interestingly often in the world of more commercial celebrity world is kind of like something that kind of feels like almost abused in a sense of, okay, I'm living in my truth and you're living in your truth. And it's almost kind of like this, it gets a narcissistic connotation in a way. So I'd love to hear what you mean by when you reference the living in your truth.
For me, that's about checking in with myself, my words, my actions, and whether or not they are aligned with how I've been conditioned to be or what feels most authentic in me. You know, we're conditioned from a very young age, first and foremost by our parents or caretakers and by our churches and our colleagues and our governments and by PR firms. There's a whole onslaught of information coming in telling us who we're supposed to be, what we're supposed to think, how we're supposed to act, who we're supposed to love. And it's impossible for any of us to fit into that box of conditioning. Yeah. And yet, we spend a lot of our lives contorting ourselves to fit into that box because we're told that if we don't, there's something wrong with us. And so for me, living in my truth is a consistent practice of checking in with myself. Is this response authentic or is it a conditioned response? Am I acting in alignment with my heart or am I acting in alignment with the fears and expectations others are placing on me? You know, who's guiding the ship essentially? And typically speaking, when I'm making choices that are rooted in my mind, so often they're mired in fear and insecurity and expectation and obligation, and they're not always true, right? And so as much as possible, when I'm checking in with myself, if I find that what I'm doing is more of a conditioned response, do I have the courage in the moment to nudge myself towards something that feels more authentic? And start eliminating as much as possible the conditioned choices and enhancing the ones that feel more authentic to who I am.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. I'm just kind of that there's so many kind of like, and we're talking a lot about, of course, Gezi's kind of like virtues and kind of like beautiful traits and qualities. And I'm also kind of like laughing to myself about how soft-spoken you are because not that the book isn't, but it's also incredibly humorous. It's incredibly in your face in many ways, all the facets. And it's incredibly kind of like has come up for me as I kind of like I kept it on my nightstand for a few nights. And I think that's what kind of like this book invites you to do. And also that's what I kind of like want to put out there to the audience. It's not a classic self-help or self-development book that kind of like follows a program and an A to Z. I would say it's aphorisms, it's poetry. It's so many of those things that are kind of like meant to inspire us, but bring out these kind of like brings out the creativity and brings out the daunting parts as well, the kind of like difficult parts. And it's in you incredibly honest also, honest about, you know, I think you're saying asshole traits and, you know, traits within us that we may have, you know, pushed away and pushed aside. You're also talking about, I think you are referring to yourself as someone who has the trait of jealousy. Yeah, or whether absolutely. It was kind of like, so I'd love for you to kind of like hear more about like how you've like dealing this with this in your own personal life, but also how you're processing this in the book, just to get the audience a little bit of a glimpse of that.
Sure. I mean, look, the book is divided into three sections, you, me, and us. So the you section is all written in the second person to you. And the energy of that section tends to be a bit more of like a cheerleading, like reminding people that they are worthy and they are loved and all of these things. And then the me section, much more self-reflective. It's like owning my shit, looking at the parts of myself that are actually difficult to like, but understanding that even those parts we can shine love on. Like it is in us to love all of who we are, even the aspects that are difficult to like. And what I've learned in my life is that I've never shamed myself into a more healed place. And that's what our mind wants to do when we confront our envy or our jealousy. We go to these places of shame and condemnation, but that doesn't really help in my experience. And then what we end up doing is we try to pretend they're not there. We put them in the cellar down below. And anything that we try to stifle in silence just makes noise, right? It pounds on the cellar door and maybe it comes out through passive-aggressive comments or aggressive-aggressive comments or whatever it is, instead of actually just taking ownership like, hey, it's entirely human to be envious all human minds on the planet contend with envy to some extent. And so my being envious, my mind being envious, doesn't need to define me unless I allow myself to be defined by what I'm thinking. And why would I? Because so often what I'm thinking isn't even true. We have this idea that we have to believe our thoughts and that everything we think is true, when in fact so much of what we think, especially anything that suggests we are unworthy or less than or worthless, it's all lies. So part of my process of loving myself more is challenging my mind more, and not from a place of war. I don't go to battle with my mind. That's a losing battle every time.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I do challenge it, and I do ask my mind, is what you're saying true? Is that certainly true? Because it sounds to me like it isn't. And then when you get in that conversation in that way, at the very least, it shifts the energy in the moment. So if the energy had been that you were the hamster on the wheel of self-abuse and self-loathing, suddenly you've introduced something else that can maybe shift it and gives you a chance to reframe what's going on and center yourself back in love if possible.
I love how you phrase that. It's, of course, like also a known message from spiritual teachers, but I think the playfulness that you introduce it with kind of like going into conversations, which is also kind of like what Michael Singer might call like just becoming aware of your conscious awareness versus your feelings and thoughts. Right. You're saying like, I'm having these conversations with my mind, but all of these messages that you're also putting out there about separating yourself for a moment is witnessing yourself, or kind of like whatever you may call it, is just kind of like you said at some point, you did a separation right now when you were saying, I'm feeling jealous, into my mind has these messages and stories of jealousy, and they're not true.
Exactly. So they're real because they're happening, but there is a distinction for me between what is real and what is true. Mm-hmm. And what is true is what is coming from my heart and the motivations of my heart and love and compassion. Envy is not that story. Envy is a story of the mind that is rooted in scarcity and insecurity and fear. And that's real. I'm feeling it. I feel the heaviness of it in my body, but it is not in any way resonant with my deepest truth. And I think bearing witness, as you said, is a critically important practice to creating more peace in our lives, recognizing we're not our thoughts. And it is one of the more well-known spiritual metaphors for that is become the sky and let your thoughts be the clouds, or let your thoughts be the weather. And we are wildly expansive, energetic beings, and we are the sky. And so what's happening in my mind can just be, you know, in one part of my mind, it's raining, and another part, it might be sunny, right? If I'm attached to any of that, I'm losing myself in something that doesn't even represent who I am, because if there's someone bearing witness to my thoughts, then I can't be the thoughts. And it's very easy for us to talk about this. It's a very simple concept, but the realization of that concept is not easy. It's not easy to bear witness to your mind, especially when it's tearing you down and telling you all these
things. No, it's also because our archaic brain is prone to clinging, to holding on, to going into fight, flight, freeze, to all of these things. Everything that's like all the dispositions in our human beings is kind of saying, don't do that. Don't let that go. So, and especially in times of struggle, it's a struggle that happens every minute. It's a practice that happens. Yeah,
it's a practice, but it does become more natural the more you practice at it.
So we will just go on a short commercial break, and we will be right back in just a couple of minutes. Please tune right back in with us with this awesome conversation with Scott Debiel. Hello and welcome back to High Energy Health. I'm Miriam Paninsky, and today in conversation with Scott Debiel about his newest book, Enough As You Are. And we were just talking about, again, that this book is just such a beautiful tool to just, again, keep by your bedside, just open it. It's, again, it's poetic, it's short, what I would call aphorisms, short paragraphs, very short kind of inspirational notes. And I think there is a very profound, I was just saying to Scott that there is a really profound spiritual message in there that may be known, but the way that Scott has laid it out here is extremely approachable and close to kind of like what we experience in our daily life versus kind of like a Bhagavad Gita feels very far away sometimes. But someone writing, and I just like opening one thing that I just read this morning, where Scott is saying we're three sections, you, me, us. And in the you section, it's okay to numb yourself with food or booze, drugs or sex, shopping or the internet or all of them in the same hour, because this reality is hard as hell to live in, with and through. And when you're done numbing, let yourself feel again, because deeper than that need to numb your life is the need to feel your life. And again, it's so, so honest and so approachable is because we are in a time of major distractions. We have never had as many distractions as we had in this time and age. So
absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I think that we quote unquote spiritual people can be very dogmatic about the way we approach our lives. And I used to judge myself harshly for numbing as though there was something wrong with it, instead of just understanding that too is part of this human experience and the human reality. Now, if all you're doing is numbing, and if the choices you're making around that numbing are hurting you or your life, that's a different story, obviously. But in general, there's no way. I think you have to numb, actually, to stay sane here. You have to distract yourself and check out of the onslaught of information and energies coming at you all the time. And again, as a spiritual person, not feel compelled to be processing all the time and to be with it. As much as I am all about feeling my feelings and give energy to feeling my feelings, sometimes I just want to feel a Netflix binge, you know what I mean? And that is like the perfect choice for me in those moments. And what I've learned, Miriam, is so often when we're suffering in a moment, oftentimes it's less about what we're doing and more about how we're judging what we're doing, right? Like if I'm watching a Netflix show for hours at a time and it's something that I enjoy, that's just me watching something I enjoy. It's when my mind comes in and tries to tell me you're lazy, you're wasting your time, you're hurting your eyes, or whatever else my mind wants to say about me spending hours watching Netflix. That's when I suffer. But without that story that my mind is placing on the action, all I'm left with is me and my TV and a show I like, right? And that for me is another practice of self-love. It's understanding that we can gradually start to give less attention to those voices that want to shame us for the actions we're taking. And then you're just left with the action.
I'm curious though, Scott, from your own experience, because I think what people often struggle with, and I see this also with our clients, is you can allow yourself to numb or to binge eat or to binge watch Netflix, or again, like binge on a tub of ice cream. But often and especially with the media, and especially with the phone addiction, it's often hard to transition out of the numbness again for people. I'm wondering if you have what kind of strategies or what kind of methodologies you have kind of like applied in your own life, or what is it that you kind of that helps you kind of, and again, it sounds like you're still like, even when you're numbing yourself, you're doing so consciously, but what happens if we kind of like numbing ourselves unconsciously, and how to kind of like, when we are at the point of feeling, okay, that, you know, that's harming me now, how to transition out of that, you know, especially with these addictive patterns triggered in our body, you know, what were some of strategies for you?
I mean, for me, what I've noticed is just that when the more fulfilling my life is, the less inclined I am to numb. So what that looks like for me is connection. I notice when I'm feeling lonely and when I'm spending too much time isolating, which is something that I do, I steer toward introversion. And where I can take that is to isolation. When I'm living in that way, I'm much more inclined to resort to numbing and checking out. When I'm feeling that my life has more fulfillment in it, and when I'm carving out time for people in my life, when I'm doing things in my life that feel more satisfying and more meaningful, I'm less inclined to check out. So for me, look, I'm addicted to my phone. It's not something I feel great about in general. And I also give myself a lot of grace. I know that they were designed to be addictive, and they have that on most people who use them. So I'm more interested in the relationship that I have with myself, no matter what choices I'm making, which is to say, I would rather make what I believe to be unhealthy choices, but feel good about myself, than be someone who's always making healthy choices, but is still lost in a mind that is self-abusive and judging myself consistently. So for me, the question is always, how can I get in better relationship with myself no matter what I'm doing? And then around addiction and numbing, again, the more fulfilling and meaningful my life feels, the less inclined I am to get lost. Yeah. And so then it's about what choices can you make intentionally to add more meaning, more connection, more joy, more creativity into your life. Because I believe that what is true for me in that regard is true for most people, that the more fulfilling our lives become, the less inclined we are to need to escape from them. Does that answer your question or not so
absolutely.
Much?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And I think though, and that's something that you've kind of touched upon in some parts of the books and now as well, is also kind of like the principle of also the only way out is through. For a moment, as you kind of release a numbing agent, it's going to hurt. You're going to feel what you haven't felt or what you've tried to suppress or numb. So for a moment, it's gonna hurt. But again, like coming back to the sense of being present and being a witness to that and not becoming attached to what is hurting or the story behind pain, what's going to make this the wall of pain crumble.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, presence is a key. Vulnerability is a key. Feeling what is really going on for you is a key. Acknowledging it, being honest with yourself. And these are also happen to be the things that make a lot of people want to numb, right? Like yes. That's the catch, because it's painful to get honest with yourself, or it can be. It's painful to look at the harder aspects because we have a mind that is hell-bent on judging us and shaming us. And that is a very difficult loop to get out of, and one that we love to silence with our numbing choices or addictive choices.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Scott. We'll go into our next short little commercial break. Please tune right back in with us just in a couple of minutes for this wonderful conversation. Thank you. Welcome back to today's episode of High Energy Health. I'm Miriam Pinensky. Today in conversation with Scott Stabile about his newest book, Enough As You Are. And we were just talking, or Scott was just talking about the importance of presence and honesty to ourselves. But you're also very much emphasizing in the third part of the book, which is us, you keep emphasizing the importance of finding the courage of going into uncomfortable conversations. Would you mind elaborating a little bit on that and kind of like the importance of authenticity and how that shows up in our relationships and the authenticity of our relationships and what it means to be honest and uncomfortable? Because it doesn't mean to be an asshole or a jerk. It may sometimes mean that, but
not necessarily. Yeah.
Not necessarily. Yeah.
I mean, for me, I don't know how far can you go without being honest. In terms of your relationship with yourself or your relationship with anyone else, it is limited by the depth of honesty you're willing to offer, right? Which is to say, if you can't say what's really going on for you within the context of your relationship, then it's unlikely that that relationship is going to ever be as fulfilling as it could be. If you're not willing to express your boundaries, if you're not willing to express your insecurities, if you're not willing to express your fears, if you're not willing to express your anger when your partner or family member or friend is pissing you off. And in my experience, I believe deeply that with honest communication, you will be moving a relationship forward. It's the only possibility. It's just that forward may end up looking like you going your separate ways. But if that decision is coming from a place of really honest, vulnerable communication, then I really trust that's what's meant for that relationship. And I'm not saying that's what always is going to happen, obviously, like that's maybe much rarer than not. But I feel like we spend a lot of time tiptoeing around the edges with one another. We're so preoccupied about hurting each other's feelings that we don't end up expressing what it is we really need to say. And you can say what you need to say and still remember to be compassionate in the saying of it, and kind and empathetic in the saying of it. But without it, I just think that we limit ourselves and we limit our relationships. And also to that, Miriam, I would say one other thing is that we all know the dread of having a hard conversation. And how, I mean, I've put off hard conversations for months, maybe years, probably. We all have done this. I also believe we all know the relief that comes with having initiated the conversation and actually just speaking what needs to be spoken. It's like 10 elephants coming off your shoulders, and we've dreaded it. We put so much energy into the dread, and way more energy is put into the dread than the actual conversation once we start having it.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely, absolutely right. Dread, and that's also the dread creates then the defense, and the defense is what creates the disconnected conversation and so on. Like all the self-protectors that we create in the dread, already kind of anticipating the worst case scenario in this conversation and speaking from that point rather than from an open and curious point towards the other person and ourselves. So 100%. And that kind of like leads to something else, that another concept or another word that kind of travels throughout this book is forgiveness. So what is the importance of forgiveness? And I want to kind of like pre-phrase this by saying that I'm, you know, working as an EFT practitioner on generational and ancestral trauma, and working with many individuals that, you know, come highly traumatized and abused, and where, you know, where we can just see like forgiveness is not a one-time, it's a journey that cannot be forced, especially when we come from an abusive background, yet it's part of the liberation process. So I'm always cautious with clients who want to jump into forgiveness really quickly. So I just... It's like, honor your wounded part. Let's honor your child that has been abused. Is she or he ready to forgive? Are you sure? So yeah, just wanted to pre-phrase that, but would love to hear some from you.
Yeah, I mean, forgiveness is one of the more triggering subjects. I would say of the things I talk about, when I talk about forgiveness, it pisses the most people off of the different things I talk about. And I understand why. And I'm not here to tell anyone they have to do anything. And I'm certainly not here to tell anyone they have to forgive, you know, if they don't want to or they're not ready to. What I am here to say, however, is that I see forgiveness as love. And I have, you know, I'll tell a story from my life, which is
also a form of self-love, by the way. Just want to interject.
100%. Absolutely. You know, for me, forgiving someone is freeing myself from the toxic tether to them or the situation. It is allowing for a more expansive experience around whatever happened with the person. And in the story I'll share from my life, it might carry us into commercial break, but I'll go as long as I can go. I lost my parents when I was 14. They were shot to death in Detroit, where I grew up. And the man who killed them also killed they owned a convenience store, and it was like a convenience store fruit market. And they had an employee that worked for them, and this man killed the employee as well. So I was only 14 years old, and I wasn't in any way thinking about forgiveness at that time. What I was sitting with inside myself when I would think of this man was just hatred and vengeful thoughts and wishing he would die and imagining horrible scenarios. And it wasn't until my early 20s when I started to awaken in a different way to the power of love in my life and in life in general. And yet when I would think of this man, it was still with this hatred, and it was still with these horrible thoughts inside. And so I said to myself, like, you gotta figure out a different way to be with this, because this is not good for you. Physically, I could feel it in my body, emotionally. And what I felt at the time was, I need to figure out how to forgive this man. And like you said, you don't just choose forgiveness. It doesn't drop out of the sky because you want to forgive. That's not how forgiveness has ever worked for me. But what I felt like I could do consciously was I could choose to empathize with this man as much as I was able. And so without knowing the details of his life, what I felt like I could confidently say was, this must be a person who feels very lost and very angry and probably hopeless and unloved and unseen. Because I felt like for someone to kill three people, they must feel some version of all those things. And I thought, I feel unloved and lost and confused and angry and all of these things that I'm imagining he felt. And it allowed me to connect to his humanity. And even the violence, in my head, I'm like, well, I could never connect to that violence. But when I got honest with myself, I was thinking of him dying in horrible ways. And I, not to act on that, but even the violence was something that I could connect with. My mind has violent thoughts. And suddenly this man who had just been a murderer for many years of my life was becoming another human being. My empathy was humanizing him, and I was connecting to him as a brother on this journey in this reality. And what I noticed was that when I would think about him, it was with love in my heart, and that that love, without intending to do it or without forcing it in any way, I realized that I have forgiven this man. I am not holding on to this experience with him in this toxic, physically, emotionally debilitating way. And so for me, that has been one of the greatest gifts I've ever been given in my life, was to be shown that I was able to access forgiveness for something that most people view as unforgivable.
Scott, I so appreciate you sharing that. It's just magical if a story like that gets shared and transmitted. And I'm really grateful for that. We're just going on a last little break before we continue our last segment of this conversation in just a couple of minutes. Thank you. Welcome back to our last segment of High Energy Health. I'm in conversation with Scott Stabile today about his book, Enough As You Are. And Scott was just sharing, for those of you who are just tuning in, please watch listen to the replay of this show, just sharing about just the power of forgiveness and what that meant in your own life, Scott. And you were just saying in the break for me, which I just want to quote, says, I've never regretted forgiving. I've never regretted loving.
Yeah, I think there's this myth that, you know, there's this idea that you can love too much and you can deplete yourself from love and exhaust yourself.
But that's not love.
That's not love. Exactly. The reason that you're exhausted because of the expectations you've placed on it and the conditions, and then it becomes something other than love. But for me, the energy of love is energizing. It's abundant. It's revitalizing. It's not something that depletes you, in my experience. I just don't see how it's possible, honestly.
Well, and if it does deplete you, then question whether it's love. That's
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's not love that's depleting you. It's something else that's happening in our minds.
Whatever it is, whether it's codependency or control mechanisms of some sorts. But if it depletes you, it's...
There's another story.
Yes, there's something else at play.
Exactly.
Also, what I want to bring in here a little bit is kind of like your own background as a breathwork practitioner, which I love. And also, of course, you know, being me coming from, again, from EFT and kind of just the importance for me, just any kind of somatic technique, whatever you do is kind of a game changer when it comes to processing any kind of stuck emotions, trauma, whatever it is. So I'd love to hear a little bit about the significance that breath work or kind of like any kind of other work has had for you and, you know, in becoming who you are and kind of like putting a powerful message like this out there.
Well, it's funny you use the word game changer, because that's a word I use often to describe breath work. You know, for me, it's just one of the most powerful practices for moving stuck energy, for clearing stuck energy, for allowing me to tap into past wounds and actually create healing. You know, sometimes I wonder, like, does a wound ever really get healed fully? And then I've had experiences in my life and in breathwork where I'm like, I do not connect to that wound anymore. It's like, I can't even channel it. I can't even bring it up. And so the gifts of breathwork or other somatic practices, I think it's hard for me to talk about them because they've been so profound and so varied.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
The stories sound outrageous.
It's miraculous. It sounds miraculous.
It sounds
crazy sometimes. It's like when I...
It is crazy.
Yeah.
It's wild. And I don't want to oversell it, even though it really happens. Like, these things really happen.
No, but I think you have to also, like, with any of this, like, I do this work now for a year with a woman that lost her husband to suicide a year ago, veteran with 5 kids, to kind of say that this woman feels liberated and freer than she's ever felt in her life before. That thinking she's lost the love of her life is an understatement. And not because of me, but because of the work and the embracing of all of this and the work and allowing something like breath work and other somatic tools just to, it really is like, it's nothing short of miraculous.
I know. It's so exciting to even have any role in it is to hold space for people in that way. It's such a gift.
I was just going to say, it is such a gift. Yes,
it really is.
Yeah.
Do you want to call out some page numbers?
Yes, I'll tune in. Just like pulling a card. Pull it like a card and just land on something. Yeah, just open somewhere.
Uh-oh. What'd you turn to?
I don't expect my neuroses to disappear. But they don't carry the same weight as they once did because I don't feel as heavy about them. I don't judge my perfectionism, obsessive thinking, envy and compulsive habits the way I used to. I see them as part of being human, and I've chosen to accept them as aspects of my personality. I find them annoying, even crippling at times, but I try not to begrudge myself for them. I don't believe we evolve out of our personalities as much as we evolve into a more expansive acceptance of who we are. I'm learning to let my mind be without the compulsion to become my mind. We're again there, right? At the beginning of our conversation, full circle. Yeah. In my commitment to love myself, I shower love on the frustrating bits too. I become the sky and don't fret as much about my inclement weather.
There we go. It did come full
circle. No coincidences, right?
You must have a lot of neuroses if you turn to that page.
100%. And falling in love with every single one of them.
Yeah, there you go. Shall I flip to one?
Yes, you go.
All right. Okay. When we pray for peace around the world, let's not forget to pray for peace within ourselves. Who will listen to a prayer for peace from those who refuse to model it, from those who lack empathy and compassion, from those always ready for a fight? Peace cannot come from war, and we are all at war with ourselves and with each other. We have to be willing to confront our own hypocrisies when we pray for peace, to unbury all internal resistance to that call, so our prayers will not be muddied by our own unwillingness to rest in love. Where within ourselves are we too aggressors? Where are we unwilling to empathize? Where do we wish for harm to come to those we dislike or don't agree with? Let us become the living examples of the peace we want to see in our world, and then watch how our prayers are magnified. How war cannot endure within the energy of love we together have co-created. Prayers alone won't do it. We cannot root out war in our world until we root it out in ourselves, until we return to love.
Not much else that has to be said after that.
We could
and
just
how befitting to the time.
Yeah, truly.
Yes.
That's what I'm really sitting with so much, Miriam, in just watching. It is really just becoming more and more committed to engaging with people who are foundationally about love. Like, I am not interested anymore in participating in communities or tribes or organizations or anything that are about in any way shaming and dehumanizing others. Yeah. And even those that they feel are dehumanizing others, it's yes. like the way is not to do the same thing. And I'm
yes, and that's the most like, radical form of activism, by the way, that one can do.
It's visceral at this
point. Yes,
it's my body will not allow it.
I can't absolutely 100% with you.
Yeah, so
I can't even finish reading like a paragraph of someone who's writing that with that spirit. It's kind of like, okay, that just
it's not why I'm here. That's what I've really come to discover, is it's like it's about honoring where I feel like my gifts most align or what is most home for me, and if love isn't there, I feel more destabilized than ever now. And I also feel like I'm not in any way contributing something of service by participating in these types of conversations. And I'm not perfect at it either.
Oh, no one. How?
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. It's like it's an endless invitation to participate in a toxic way. And I am getting just better and better at being like, no, not me.
Yes. Not going. No, thank you.
No, thank you. Much love. And yes. I'm going to bow out. I'd much rather have conversations like this.
Yes.
But also,
100%.
I'm so inspired by activists who are able to hold on to compassion and empathy and not lose sight of the humanity in other people.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to continue that conversation with you 100%. Absolutely there with you. As we end, I'd just like to kind of bring attention to you and whatever else it is you're offering. Check out Scott's book, Enough As You Are, is the newest one. Big Love, The Power of Living with a Wide Open Heart is the other one. ScottStabile.substract.com or ScottStabile.com, Facebook, Instagram. There's just lots of good stuff, lots of good content for the audience to explore. Yeah. And I'm just really grateful for this inspired conversation. That's all I can say. Just beautiful.
Me too.
Thank you so much.
So much. And I just want to say, come to Bali. I'm giving a retreat with my dear friend David Gandelman in May.
There you go.
It's going to be breathwork meditation. And Miriam, it's been lovely to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And we will be back with you next week with High Energy Health. Thank you so much.